Welcome once again to this week's edition of Insights into the Weekly Parsha. Our Parsha this week is Parshas Toldos. And I'd like to begin this morning by giving gratitude, expressing a karas tov and thanks. This week's Parsha Shir is generously sponsored anonymously in the merit of the Refuah Shalema for the speedy recovery for Shlomo ben Chaya Fegel Halevi and Gittel Rezel Chaya Bas Sara. The Refuah Shalema for both of them should be speedy. They should have a speedy recovery. And the schus and the merit of studying Torah together should be a merit for them and a merit for the entire family. We have a jam-packed, action-filled parsha. Parsha's Toldos, of course, the stories of Sefer Bereishis. They are unfolding before our very eyes each week, building on the previous week, anticipating the weeks that will be ahead. Of course, the story that we know and the stories that we've been told over years and years. But what's fascinating, what's deep about the Torah, of course, is that the commentaries that we learn give us new, nuanced perspectives of lessons to learn, applications for our lives in a very deep and a very meaningful way. So I want to focus our attention this morning, a very important lesson that perhaps lie beneath the surface, but something that's so essential for us in the world that we live in, the times that we're in, and what motivates us to realize truly how great we are, how great we can become, and the things that we can achieve and the things that we can accomplish. So let's begin with, we know that the Torah in Parshas Toldos tells a number of stories, but it tells the story of a very, very important transition that takes place, something that literally makes maneuver for all that happens afterwards. And that, of course, we talk about the sale of the birthright and the story of Esav's sale of the birthright to his younger twin, to Yaakov Avino. We tend to not really always understand this story so well. We read, of course, what is called Pashut Pshat, the basic understanding of the story as it's told. But there's so much that lie beneath the surface, so much commentary on this transaction and what this transaction ultimately means. Who's the Bechor? What does the Bechor mean? Why was it essential for Yaakov Avino to have the Bechor, to have this firstborn, to have this right, to be able to secure the blessings, the brachos that his father, the Yitzchak, would give him? And noting that, how important it was ultimately that Esav realizing what he gave up when he then realizes that Yaakov takes his bracha in the way he explains it, and he was deceived in his perception, and his ability then to want a blessing, to want a bracha from his father nonetheless. So this story is crucial. It's critical in understanding this transition that takes place. And this transition that takes place is sometimes overlooked as, you know, just this beginning of the parsha. We have that Esav is tired and Esav is hungry and he is, you know, facing death, imminent demise. And there's this transaction, but this transaction is huge. It's pivotal, it's transformative, it's transactional, of course, and it is essential to understanding what takes place ultimately in the psukim and in the parshios ahead. So let's understand, let's study this together. So we know that Esav, he had arrived home. He was weary, he was tired, he was a hunter. Right? He was a man of the field. Yaakov was described as a Yoshev, a Holim, a one who dwells in the tents. Whereas Esav was a hunter. He was a man of the field. And he came home from his hunt and he was exhausted. He was weary. He was spent. And he comes in, as we mentioned, he comes in and he asks Yaakov, who is cooking some lentil soup, to serve him a portion of the stew that he was preparing. Right? The Pasuk tells us, as we remember, the Pasuk says, Vayozed Yaakov nozid, vayova Esav min hasada v'ayef. Yaakov was cooking a pottage, a stew, it was lentil soup, of course, as we know. And Esav, he came from the field, he came from the sada v'ayef, and he was tired. Now, what kind of tired is that? So pashut pshat, the simple explanation is, the topical read is, he was just physically exhausted. We're going to see that that means something else. The next passage says, vayomer Esav el Yaakov, and Esav says to Yaakov, Haliteini na min ha'adaim ha'adaim hazeh. Pour into me some of the red, the pottage, the stew that you are cooking. Ki ayef anochi, because I'm tired. I'm ayef. I'm faint. I'm wiped out. Al kein kara shemo edom. Now here's what's interesting. His naming, you know, that the highlight, of course, at a bris, everybody's anticipating after the baby has a circumcision. What's the vikara shemo b'yiso? What's the baby's name going to be? Or the naming of a girl. Vikara shemo b'yiso. What's the name going to be? Everyone's anticipating the name. So you would think that, you know, there'd be a little bit of a different location as to when Esav's name, It takes place. When does he get his name? He has his name. His name is Esav at the beginning of the parasha. But therefore, because of the fact that he wants this red stuff, and therefore, in proximity to him feeling ayef, to feeling weak, to feeling tired, and this whole conversation takes place with his brother, Alkein Karashimo Edom. His name is Edom. They name him this as a result of the Edom, the red. he gets his name. So we're going to see that Esav actually has his name from a derivation of a number of different places, a number of different sources. But here we see that here's the second. First he's Esav, and now he's Edom, because of his hunger, because of this red stuff, because of this pottage, because of this transaction. So of course, it's not just that he gives him this pottage, he doesn't just give him the soup. Yaakov requested the birthright in exchange, and Esav thus consents. Now, part of, as the Mishnah tells us, what a person has to become very discerning. Part of the responsibility of an individual, the Mishnah teaches us, a person has to be Ro'es HaNolad. What does Ro'es HaNolad mean? Ro'es HaNolad means you have to anticipate the future. You have to think about what's going to be down the road. And you plan today for what's going to be tomorrow. If you save money today on a sunny day, then on a rainy day, you'll have what to spend. If you anticipate where it is you want to achieve a goal, a milestone. So you got to work hard today. You want to run on a marathon. You want to bike certain distances. You want to accomplish certain Masechtas and Shas, you want to know how to read Hebrew, you have to plan, you have to be a Ro'es HaNolad. So there's something about what Yaakov Avinu realized, that I'm not just going to give you a pot of soup, you're tired, you're weakened, you're my brother, sure, come into my house, what can I give you? Remember that Yaakov is the grandson of Avram Avinu, who is the consummate Machnas Eirich. Hachnasas Orchim is essential to the definition of who he was. And so therefore, obviously, like his father and like his grandfather, he was a Machnas Eirich. Why doesn't he just give him the soup? The answer is that he understood. He was a Ro'es HaNolad. Being a Ro'es HaNolad means that he was able to anticipate, he was able to perceive that there's something, that there's going to be something necessary that I'm going to have to achieve. And that is the birthright for me to be able to secure the brachos, to be able to secure the blessings. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that he understood everything that was going to take place in the psukim that follow with his mother Rivka and the Hakol Kol Yaakov, HaYedayim Yidei Esav. The voice is the voice of Jacob, and the feel and the touch is the touch of Esav, because he was wearing hairy skins. He didn't necessarily know that, but maybe there was something he was on to realize there's something about the Bechorah, there's something about the firstborn or the birthright that was essential for Yaakov Avinu, who was the second twin, for him to achieve that, to secure that, to be able to secure the blessings, be able to secure the brachos. So that's what the Pasuk tells us. Vayomer Yaakov, Michra Chayom es Becharos Chali, sell to me today, this day, your birthright. Don't put it into escrow. Don't wait for another time. Now, you want it? The soup from me, I want something from you. There's an exchange. There's something that I need. It's okay. No problem. Vayomer Yaakov, he shava li kayom vayishava lo vayimkar es becharoso li Yaakov, and said, it seemed to be that Esav acquiesces. Esav's willing to do it. He says, no, buddy, listen to me. Swear to me. Shava li. Let's make this very, very set in stone, very clear. Swear to me. And so he swore to him. And that was vayishava lo. And the swearing of Esav to Yaakov about the transaction and transition from birthright that was owned by one and owned to another, sent to another, that's the Shavalo Vayimkaris Becharoso to Yaakov, and he then sells his birthright. Now, I don't know, and of course this is part of a different direction, which we're not going to spend time speaking about now, but I don't know, how is it possible the commentaries deal with, is it a function of you just being born first and therefore the birthright is yours? Like, how does a person sell their status in the birthing order? So what we understand from that is, you can't say if you're the firstborn, it's okay, I'm going to sell you the fact that I was firstborn, really, physically, tangibly, and now I'm going to sell that to you. How can you change the reality? So what we understand is that there's a lot more to what the Bechor and the birthright, the Bechoros Chali, meant, what it was understood by Yaakov Avinu. It's not just the chronological, physical birth of one child, one human being, and then another, because obviously you can't change Teva, you can't change nature. What we understand is what he was having him swear, what the transaction was, what this transition meant, what the security of the blessings was dependent on, was the understanding of what the Bechor was, what it meant to have this tremendous treasure called this birthright. And having this tremendous treasure called the birthright is something that Yaakov Avinu understood that he had to secure. So that's what we understand. This is this transaction. And it would seem to be that the story could end right here. And yet, there is one more pasuk that needs to be focused on, and that pasuk is going to make all the difference in the world. The pasuk concludes the Torah concludes this story by saying, Vayivez Esav es habechora, that Esav scorned the birthright, right? But Yaakov nasan le'Esav lechem unezid adoshim. Yaakov gives him bread and he gives him lentil soup, right? Vayoychal vayesht, he eats it and he drinks. Vayelech, and he gets up and he leaves. But here are the words. Vayivez Esav es habechora, and Esav despised the bechora. We're adding a lot of new parts to this. It's not just that this must not be and cannot be, and obviously isn't just a biological, chronological, physicality, tangible transaction, because you can't do that. There's something that Yaakov Avinu knew, and it seems though from the fact that these words say "Vayivez Esav es habechora," that Esav despises the birthright. There's something that Esav maybe also understands. You know, we tend to look at this story and see how things play out and wonder like, wow, was Esav duped here? Did he not realize the treasure that he had and Yaakov knew it? And he says, okay, you're vulnerable, you're hungry, you're going to die. So give me the most treasured, you know, thing that you have. And you didn't know what it was. So maybe by very virtue of the fact that the Torah says, Vayivez Esav es habechora, there's something that even Esav understands about it. And the fact that he understands something about it, he despises it, and therefore he's willing to give it up. He's not just willing to give it up circumstantially. It's not like afterwards he regrets it. Afterwards he regrets it, and this is very important to understand what Rashi says and what the Sephardim explain, but it's not that not only does he not regret it, he despised it. He's willing to give it up. He's willing to, no matter what the circumstance, not just circumstantially because he's starving, he's hungry, he's facing death, and therefore what's he supposed to do? He's going to ransom anything that he can to get what he needs to survive. No. Vayivez Esav es habechora means that there's something that's more. What's more is that he despised it. What did he despise about it? What was so egregious? What was so awful about it? So Rashi explains something important in his commentary, that the Torah here testifies to the rishis of Esav. Like, when do we know that Esav becomes a rasha? How do we know that he's a wicked man? We only know that he's a wicked man, Vayishlach, in Parshas Vayishlach, when he's coming after Yaakov Avinu, do we only know he's a wicked man because he wants to kill his brother at the end of our Parsha? This, and Parshas told us this coming Shabbos, how do we know that he's a wicked man? Rashi tells us maybe this is the first time that we know that he's wicked. We know that the two babies are warring inside the rechem, the womb of Rivka, their mother. But we aren't told that this man is a rasha, even though he's excited about the reason why he's kicking is the Gemara tells us that he's kicking because he... When they would pass a base of Oivdei Kochavim, idolatry, so he would kick, he'd be excited. He had an indication, an inclination towards that. But how do we know that he's a Rasha? How do we know that he's a villain? How do we know at what point? So Rashi explains that the Torah here is testifying to his wickedness, to his rishis, that he scorns the service of the Almighty. Vayivez Esav Sabechora means that he scorns the Avodas Hashem. He scorns the service of God. This puts into a whole new light these psukim. Rashi explains, Vayivez Esav, so Heyed HaKosuv Al Risho, that the Torah here attests to the Risho, to the wickedness of Esav, Shebiza, so that he despised, what's the Biza? It doesn't tell us in Chumash. Vayivez Esav Esav Bechor, just says he despises the Bechor, but the Biza is, Shebiza Avaydosa Shel Mokum. Rashi says it very, very, very clearly. What does he despise? He despises the avoda, the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hamakom is not just place, as we've learned previously. Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu. Hamakom Yinachem Eschem. Hamakom is the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That he was biza avodaso shel makom, that he despised the avoda, the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What a person needs to do in serving God. What is it you need to serve God? You need to do the mitzvos. You need to learn Torah. You need to be charitable. You need to be law-abiding. You have to have value. You have to have ethic. You have to live with a different code of morality, a different set of rules. No. Esav, I'm not interested in that. Vayivez Esav as a bechora was a direct definition of who he was and what he stood for and what was egregious to him, what was opposed to his nature, what it was that he was against. He was opposed to service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's what it says, the Risha Shebizo Avodaso Shel Mokom, that he despised the service of the Almighty. Now, this is something that also, of course, needs explanation. Now, the privileges we understand, as Rashi is meant to be understood, The privileges of the bechorah, the privileges of the birthright, so they come with special religious responsibilities. They come with obligations. They come with things that a person has to do, right? Everybody has to do. Now, of course, if you're a Kohen, you have additional obligations. If you're a Levi, you have other obligations. There are just different obligations for different people, obviously. But there are obligations that come with the birthright. There's obligations that come with privileges in different statures and different statuses. So which Esav, in this case, regarded with contempt. He was Biza. Biza is a very strong word. He disregarded it. He despised it. He loathed it. It was appalling to him. And with what came with the responsibilities, the religious responsibilities that he had to now do because he was a Bechorah, he had the birthright. No. You're going to give me something, food for that? Give Valdik. I want nothing to do with that. And that's what the Sfarno adds in his commentary, that the Torah intentionally, on purpose, mentions Esav's biza, his disdain for the birthright, to emphasize something. Says the Sfarno that he wants to emphasize that he was not unfairly forced to sell something precious in exchange for food. It seems like this exchange was like so unfair that Yaakov duped his brother, that he was, you know, devious and dubious in the sense that, like, oh, you're, for food, you're going to give me something so precious. No. It says the Sfarno that's not what happens. The Torah intentionally tells us this, that it wasn't he was forced to do it, that it's very simple, that it's very, very clear that he did not desire the birthright at all. That's what it is. He didn't want it. He was looking forward to anybody willing to take it. And the fact that I can get anything out of it, it was a bizarre that he didn't, that he was able to exchange it for food. He would have done it for nothing. He would have done it for anything. And so therefore says the Sfarno very clearly that even after the sale, after this whole transaction takes place, he did not consider the birthright to be worth money for the money that he received for it, the food that he received for it, right? Now imagine he has his meal, he has his drink, he has his soup, and now he's satisfied. A person has a taiva, a person has a desire, a person's willing to sell the kitchen sink, the Brooklyn Bridge for anything that he possibly needs. And now he's satisfied, and now that urge is over. So now I think, what did I do? I have tremendous charata, I have tremendous, regret. Why in the world did I do that? No, says the Sfarno. Not at all. He was very happy to get rid of it. Even after it was that he was satisfied, even after he was sated, he was happy that it was gone. Therefore, it is not correct to say that he was cheated. Says the Sfarno, it is not correct to say that he was cheated, that he was duped, that he was that he was not fairly treated. It was something that he was happy. That's the bizoy. That's what Rashi explains. Shebizoy avodosei shel makom, and the Sfarno says, he was not cheated. He wanted it. And even after he was satisfied, he was satisfied with his decision. So that's the story as they're played out in the Psukim. Here's Rashi's interpretation. Here's the Sfarno's additional comment. And this is what seems to be Pashut Pshat with a little bit, a tinge of, a spicing of what is a nuanced interpretation. But here's, we're going to drill a little bit deeper and we're going to focus even on something more meaningful that has application in our lives in a real, in a tangible, in a today, in a right now, in a very important way. So there was a great rabbi and there was a great scholar who lived at the end of the 1800s, and his name was Rabbi Yisrael Taub. Now Rabbi Taub became the Moshe Rebbe in the year 1891, and while he was living in the hometown in Poland, in Deblin, Poland. And this was when he was crowned Rebbe, it was the late 1800s, I said, 1891. And it was there that he established the Mojitsa dynasty, which exists in many communities around the world today. There are Mojitsa Hasidim, and certainly, you know, dynasty that was extraordinary, and in communities around the world today. Now, he wrote an extensive commentary on Chumash, which is a beautiful, beautiful parish, in a wonderful sefer called the Divrei Yisrael, because his name was Yisrael Taub. So the Divrei Yisrael, the words of Yisrael, the words of Israel, his words. And a study of the Divrei Yisrael gives you unbelievable, fascinating insights into Chumash, into Parsha. And in here, he suggests that Esav's contempt for the birthright has also something deeper and additional symbolic significance. And its symbolic significance is so important. He explains that what's the word b'chayra? You have the chitzonius, you have the outside, the external, and then you have the panemius. Panemius ha-Torah is, what's the essence? What's the neshama? What's the soul? What's the root? What's inside? It's not the clothing that you see on a person, but what's the inside? What's the mahus? What's the makeup? What's the essence of Klal Yisrael? What's the essence of Yaakov Avinu? What's the essence of Esav? What's the essence of you? What's the essence of me? It explains, let's use the word Bechaira. Bechaira is this word that's essential to this transaction. But the birthright, the Bechora, this word, this term, this Mila, this word, of course, it refers to the birthright. Now, sometimes you can't even get an accurate English translation of certain words, right? We try, but sometimes you have words like shalom, for example. Shalom has multiple, you know, explanations, definitions. And then there are words, as hard as we try to define them, and as best as Art Scroll, for example, whether it's a Stone Chumash or a Gemara, try to define words or concepts and phrases. There's even something that's lacking because it's a Hebrew word. It's a ruchniistic, there's something spiritual about the word, the Bechaira. What's Bechaira? And the way you think about it is actually think about the shirish, the mahus, the root. What's the root? So even though we know that's referring to the birthright, says in the Divrei Yisrael, says the following. It says it's derived from the shirish. What's the shirish? What's the root of the word Bechaira? It's Bechor, Beis, Chof, Resh, Bechor, the three letters, which are the shirish, the root. Now this denotes and this connotes something. What's Bechor? Bechor is the first. Birthright, in those two words, birthright, it doesn't mean first. Bechor is you're the firstborn. Sometimes people say it's the firstborn or the first of. The birthright seems to be this a right that comes with the order of birth. Now we assume by attachment that that means that if you're firstborn, you're zoicha, you merit the birthright. But he explains, Bechora refers to the birthright. The word Bechor, Beis, Chof, Resh, refers to first, Bechar, Bechor. So Bechar and Bechor, first is significant to this. So he explains, there's a symbolism to that. There's something symbolic. What's the symbolism? He explains that Esav's disdain was not for the Bechora in the sense of the birthright. It's what the birthright represents. It's what was inherent, because the work in the service of the of everybody's obligation in the service of God, avodas hamakom, service of the Almighty, everybody has that obligation. You don't have to be a firstborn to have that obligation, but there's something deeper. Esav had a disdain for Bechora, for the Bechora. It's understood to mean that he despised the first stages. There's something about first that he didn't like. There's something about first that he despised. There's something about first that was against everything about who he was. And it's that first, the concept of that first, which is essential to understanding what he despised, is what we have to love. Yaakov's gain as a result of Esav's disdain. What does he disdain? What does he despise? What he despises is what I, is what you, is what we as Jews, Yehudim, is what we love. It's what we need. It's what we crave. Says the Moshe Tzarebi, says that if the Bechora, what he despised initial stages, a Bechor, a first stage of something, the difficulty, the challenge, those struggles that are confronted whenever a person begins a new endeavor, whenever a person begins a new undertaking. There's something new, right? Kol haschalos kashos, all new beginnings are hard. When you are faced with a new endeavor, with a new challenge, with a new something, you're confronted with an opportunity to begin something new. So there's resistance that's presented because it's not easy. It's challenging. Whatever the discipline is, whatever the matter is, certainly, of course, in the world of physicality. But Allah is kama v'kama v'kama. How many times do we can say it more and more? In the world of ruchnis, in the world of spirituality, the first stages. Esav, he wanted to and preferred to avoid all the challenges and all the responsibilities of the birthright. Why? Because he didn't have the patience. Patience is a key word here. He didn't have the patience to diligently study. He didn't have the patience to diligently accustom himself to the relevant strict guidelines and the procedures of every Ben Torah, of every Bas Yisrael, of every person. And certainly when you have an elevated amount of responsibility, that responsibility requires you to have patience because you have to learn it. You have to know it. You have to understand the craft. You have to understand the trade. You have to understand what it is that the Almighty calls on you to do. And therefore, says the Rebbe of Moshe, he says that Esav had contempt contempt for the Bechora in the broader sense of the word. He had contempt for the challenging process of patient study of and acclimation to something new. When there's something new that you have to acclimate yourself to, nobody likes to change things. You have a new system that you have to learn. You have a new rigor that you have to engage in. Perhaps there's something that you know it's altruistic, it's true, it's perfect, it's necessary, but it's new. And because it's new, it's not easy to change the habit and the routine that I find myself literally shackled by, literally held back from. And literally because of those things that are inhibitions, those roadblocks, those obstacles that are before me, I can't break the habits of the things that I know even that I should do. Esav, the persona of Esav, is a representation of somebody who does not want the process of challenge and the ability to patiently come towards and acclimate to something new. And by the way, we know this is true. Let's remind ourselves that when we are introduced to Esav at the very beginning of our parasha, Perek Chav Hey, Pasuk Chav Hey, chapter 25, verse 25, we read that Esav was named, again, like I mentioned, he was named Edom, but of course he was named Esav. That happens at the beginning of our parsha. So the first time he's named for a very specific reason. Why was he named? Like, how do you get a name? So first he got a name because he ate red stuff. It was Edom, because it was Adam, he wanted the red stuff. But even before that, right at the beginning of our parsha, he's named because of how he's born, what's on his body. He's named Esav because he was born with hair on his body like an adult male. Now, what is Esav? Like, what? How did he come to the name Esav? Because he's a hairy guy. So the pasuk says, "Vayetze harishon admoini kuloi ka'aderes seyar." Because of the fact that he was ruddy, he was completely with a coat of hair. He was a hairy dude. He was a hairy guy. Vayikru shemai Esav, and so therefore they named him Esav. Vakasha, tagini vakasha. How do you get to the name Esav from being fully hairy? So Rashi tells us again, so important with this theme of the Moshe Rebbe, explains that he looked ready made. He was nase. He was like an adult, and because he was nase, he was already made. Nase Esav, play on the word. Naase Esav is already made. So we'll see what that means. Vayikru shma Esav zogdrashi hakol kara lekein. They called him this. You know why? Lefisha haya nase, because he was osoy. He was already made. He was already complete. V'nigmar b'sara keben shonim harbe. He was fully developed with hair, like a person who's many years old. Keben shonim harbe, like an older man. He was already made. Now, some explain what this Rashi means. We're not just physically, physiologically, or biologically describing what his physical features were, and therefore that's what his name is. Some explain this Rashi as a quality, as a midah, characterizing and caricaturing Esav throughout his life, how he wanted to be. How did he want to be? He wanted to live as a finished product. He wanted to be done with the task. He wanted to live without having to go through the process of growth. He wanted to live without having to go through the process of development or change. He wanted to be awesome. He wanted to be made. He wanted to be nasa. And therefore, vayikru shemai Esav. He didn't want to go through the pain of growth, of development, of change. He had no patience for the bechira. I'm going to read a book. I'm going to study shas. I'm going to take my time in tefillah. Are you serious? I have no patience for that. The midah of no patience for the Bechaira is the midah of Esav HaRasha. He had no patience for the Bechaira, for undertaking something new, for learning, for training, for gradually becoming better and more accomplished. You know, when we think about learning and training, I like to, you know, kind of use those and equivocate these two concepts. And the reason why I like to do that is because you look at a world today, there's so much emphasis and emphasizing on physical fitness, which is gewaldic. Everybody should take care of the body that the Almighty, the Rebbeinu Shem, gave us. The body that he gave us for us to be able to serve him healthy by doing Avodas Hashem. But sometimes what happens, unfortunately, people are focusing on the physical fitness for physical fitness's sake. They want to see their muscles in the mirror, pumping some iron. They want a 6-pack and a 12-pack and a 24-pack and a 100-pack. I don't know how many packs you can get, but they want to be able to be trained for physical fitness sake. And kol kavod for those people who are wildly disciplined. I know people, they get up at ungodly hours, they lift ungodly amounts of weight, and they train in ways, and they drink shakes and eat egg yolks and run marathons and miles, and they do a whole host of unbelievable things for a goal, and they're training. There's a development, there's a growth. And by the way, you know, there's huge number of statistics on January 1st, for example, of scores and scores of people who join gyms as part of the New Year's resolution, right? They want to join a gym. They want to get buff. They want to be strong, right? I'm always so curious. Does there ever come a time where somebody says to the gym owner, you know what? I've been part of this gym for about 2 years. I've accomplished my goal. I am ripped and I am fit and I am really accomplished. So you know what? Thank you very much. I'm not going to renew my membership. I'm done. My task has completed. Answer is, I don't know if it's ever happened. The only reason why people stop going to gym is because they're lazy, is because they're uninterested, is because the weights are too heavy, because the commitment is too severe, and because I just don't have the time for that. So you can join a gym, pay the membership, and never go. Nobody quits a gym because they've finished, oh, you know what? I chiseled myself out. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm done. No, no, no. Why? Because there's never an end to a person who has that intoxicating desire to physically become as fit and more fit and even more fit. And there's another milestone, there's another level, there's another. And by the way, that's great. If the milestone is to continually perpetuate better health and better fitness, adraba, kol hakavod, it's gevaldik. But what does not shtim, what does not work, was that when there isn't the parallel in the world of ruchnias, in the world of spirituality, what you're willing to do and sacrifice and commit to, and recommit to, and triple up the efforts, and double, and continue all of your efforts, quadruple, and many multiple times. How many of us are willing to commit to doing that in the same world of ruchnius as well? Oh, I finished this masechta. I'm gonna now try another masechta. I learned this tractate, but now I'm gonna learn tractate with Rashi, and then I'm gonna learn it with Tosos. I'm gonna learn how to read Rashi and Chumash. I'm going to do Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum. There is Ein L'Dover Seif. There is no end, says the Mishnah in Perkei Avos. It is Lo Lecha Aloch Amalocha Ligmar. You do not have to finish the job, but you cannot be Mevatel Nimenu. You cannot stop trying because the rungs, the levels, the spirituality, the opportunity for spiritual nourishment, spiritual growth, the 6-pack of the soul, the 12-pack of the soul, the physical fitness of the body is the spiritual fitness of the soul that a person can continually strive for, achieve, and want the growth, the development, the change. Stay in the gym. Be a gym rat. Make all that commitment to bake to better health. Eat right. Be physically fit. But do not neglect the needs and the fitness of the soul. The fitness of the soul, likewise, needs growth and craves growth and wants that being fed that spiritual diet. Esav has no patience for Bechorah. He has no patience for something new. He has no patience to learn something. He has no patience to be trained. To become gradually better and more accomplished. No, no, no. Osoy, Esav, I am there. I'm done. I'm accomplished. That's who I am. That's what I will be. And I will not be something else. When we have those traits, we have the trait of Esav. And what we do is, in learning Parshios, we realize that every person has a little bit of all types of biblical personalities inside us. And part of the perfection of self is the betterment of what we try to do is to purge those forces, demonic forces from within ourselves, those temptations that try to lure us, and to try to set them aside and cast them yonder, cast them away, so we can focus on our spirituality and our growth in every area. We will not take a phone call, silence our phone, make sure we do not respond to social media. If I'm on that treadmill, if I'm on my Peloton, if I am running a training on a mission, I will be completely focused on what I'm doing. But when it comes to other matters, do I put my phone on silent when I'm learning the Blat Gemara? Do I need to check my social media while I'm chazering the shir, when I'm being married for the Sedra? How many minutes should it take you to say the Tehillim Shalayom? Well, the Tehillim, if you have seven Tehillims to say a day, it could take you a couple of minutes if you stop and just do nothing else and say it. Or it could take you half an hour if every kapitel is interrupted by this phone call and is interrupted by that. You have to be as disciplined in physical areas as you have to be in spiritual areas. You have to be as disciplined in spiritual areas as you are in physical areas. It goes simply hand in hand. And this is the, you know, every precious word, the explanation of even how Esav is described when he comes back from the field. You know, we noted that the Torah does not have any extra words. There's something significant about every single word. The significance of the Torah's description of Esav, he's returning from the field, he's fatigued. Right? What do we say? Vayozid Yaakov, nozid vayova Esav min hasodeh. It could just simply have stopped there. The Torah could have said that Esav, Jacob was cooking a pot of stew, right? Because that's necessary for this transaction. And Esav came from the field. V'hu ayef, he's tired. So the commentaries explain that ayef doesn't necessarily mean that he was physically tired. Okay, we would assume the guy, no different than any person who goes to the office in the morning, come back at the end of the day, you're tired, you had a long day. What's the Torah telling us? He's more tired than Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is Yeshev Aholim, so he's not tired. The mental energy that he used, Yaakov Avinu, in studying Torah, maybe he was tired. Maybe he was more tired. Maybe he was more tired. V'hu ayef, the Mefarshim explained that this might indicate not only a physical fatigue after a day of hunting, but it also connotes a condition of lethargy, of apathy, of weakness. He's ayef, he's fatigued, he's spiritually fatigued. He's uninterested in the growth that's necessary, and so therefore he has a lethargy. We have this similar in the case, of course, in the story of Amalek, that the Jewish people were ayef v'yageya, they were ayef also. Or were they tired? They're physically tired from the travels and travail in the desert. Some of the commentators explain yes, and others explain that they were ayef, they were just weakened in their spirituality. There was a lethargy. They were lethargic. They were apathetic. They cared too little about the spiritual matters, about the important things. And Esav, who has this midah, who is this midah, he lacks this ambition. Esav, he lacks this drive. He lacks this initiative to grow, to improve himself. He's preferring instead to be lazy. He wants to hang on the couch. He wants to just take it easy. He wants to be complacent. He wants to remain the same throughout his life. I'm osui. I'm hairy. I'm complete. I'm like an old man. I'm born. I'm like literally an old man as I'm born now. I'm like an old man. I was talking to somebody this morning after davening, after minyan this morning. And it was an older fellow who is younger than most young people that I know, because he's active. He's ambitious. He's running from one meeting to another meeting, to this learning, to that shiur, to this program, to that thing. You are as with vitality, as willing as you are to engage that, to be involved in that, to take on new challenges. How many people do you know that are in their mid to later 70s that are willing to take on new challenges, to take on new endeavors, new projects, you know, new accomplishments that lie on the horizon? That's amazing. That's incredible. And how many of us sometimes deprive ourselves from our best selves because we have the midah of Esav inside of us? Complacent, lazy. We are satisfied with our weakest self. And that happens year after year after year after decade after decade after decade. And then you find yourself at a stage in your life, you're like, oh my goodness, Favos Vildzain, what? Why didn't I do that? So we are the descendants, and we are the spiritual heirs of Yaakov Avinu, of Jacob, our forefather. So we are to embrace the Bechorah, the birthright, but more what the birthright represents, the first, the initiation, the challenge, the growth, the not being satisfied with the status quo. What's the status quo? Who wants a status quo? The whole world is either in the environment of an oila or a yoreid. Like an escalator is either up or down. There's no standstill escalators. You're either moving or you are ascending or descending. We who are the spiritual heirs, Yaakov Avinu's descendants, his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, we are the spiritual heirs. And the embracing of this concept of the Bechorah as he craved it, he needed it. He understood what it was in securing the birthright, the blessing, who are the recipients of that blessing, we're the recipients of that blessing. We are the beneficiaries of Yaakov Avinu appreciating the Bechora. And when we appreciate what the Bechora is, the challenges of learning, the challenges of growth, a certain relentlessness and a restlessness seeking to positively change and always strive to become better and better and better in every possible way. And there's so many areas that we can introduce to ourselves. And frankly, the whole idea and the notion of being a Tinuk Shenishba is really reserved for a very select few. And the reason why we say that a Tinuk Shenishba is reserved for a very small select few is that today it's almost impossible for a person not to be able to grow in Torah, to advance their tefillah, to accelerate things in their spiritual lives that they perhaps dreamed of, never thought were available as accessories to be able to assist and aid their growth. Today, available to every single person in spades. All you have to do is go onto your browser, you go to YU Torah, you go onto Chabad.org, you download the Safari app. There are Shiurim, Meaningful Minute, you know, Torah Anytime, Shiurim, apps, classes for beginners, for intermediates, for advanced, for super mega advanced. You can actually even listen to a podcast, a shiur on a higher speed if you're just feeling you don't have the time to listen to it at 1.0, you can put it up to 1.5 or 2.0. If you can listen that fast and comprehend that information, gewaldig. While we're traveling from one location to another location in your car, you put on a podcast, you listen to a shiur, you listen to a Dvar Torah, you have something to say at your Shabbos table. There's always a relentless and a restlessness to be able to grow, to understand the Parsha, to understand the Gemara, to understand what new challenges am I willing to take on. And that's true for everybody, males, females, elderly, middle-aged, children, every single person in the world of Torah, every single person in the world of Tefillah, every single person in the world of Chesed. Do not limit yourself by defining yourself as an Esav that you're done. I am who I am. I will be what I will be, and I am not able to change. The day you believe that you're not able to change is the day you might as well just rename yourself and call yourself Esav. And the day you realize that everything lies in the horizon and the opportunity for which you can accomplish greatness, literally greatness, a legacy for your descendants, is the day that your name is Yaakov, is your name is Yisrael. Hayadayim, Yidei Esav, Hakol, Kol Yaakov. The voice is the voice of Jacob. The voice is the voice that reverberates. It's the voice that sounds, that always is heard. It's the voice that perpetuates. It's the voice that is elongated. It's the voice that is the voice of the Jewish people. It's the voice of our future. It's the voice of our descendants. Hakol Kol Yaakov. V'hayidayim yidei Esav. In tefillah, in our davening, let's challenge ourselves. Let's make sure that we have an English translation for those who are not so comfortable praying in Hebrew. Let's be a little bit slower about our davening, discerning about the words of Perish Hamilim, the understanding of what it is that we're saying. Let's petition on behalf of others. Let's take it seriously. And let's challenge ourselves to be who we're destined to be, not who we think we are. Sometimes who we think we are is that we've put ourselves in the terminal port of that's who we are. Imagine if you never saw yourself doing things you're doing now, like that. Yeshua Hashem Karafayim. You weren't a minion goer, now you're a minion goer. You didn't learn Torah, now you're learning Torah every day. Every day, your day is advanced and your blessing, bracha, your whole world is different. Your whole change is so... it's so recognizable to you and to your lives. Bracha, blessing, ad bilidai. I'll just conclude my remarks this morning by sharing a story that I've shared a number of times. Of course, it's personal, and of course, it's and with my family, but it's so essential, I think, for everybody. And it's a lesson that, even though it's a lesson for everybody, it's a lesson that inspires me literally every single day. And I'll explain to you how and why. So we know that this coming Sunday, the Chevra of the Daf Hayomi, the studiers of the Daily Folio of Talmud, are going to complete Maseches Eruvin, Tractate Eruvin, a difficult, complex, complicated Masechta. Maseches Eruvin comes to a conclusion on this Sunday in the Daf Yomi cycle, and Maseches Pesachim begins on Monday. Now, every single day when I learn the Daf Yomi, I am always reminded of an incredible story within my own family. And it's the daily study. Both of my grandfathers studied the Daf Yomi diligently. They were Mesayim Shas. They were then defined in their lives by, you know, how important study of Torah and specifically the Daf Yomi was, and how importantly it is to be together on a daily study with everybody else in Klal Yisrael. How special you can walk into any shul when you're able to walk into the shul to listen to Daf Yomi Shir. You miss it in your shul. You're traveling on business in that shul and you stop in that community. Literally from Antwerp to Johannesburg to Los Angeles to Boca Raton to the five towns, the same Daf every single day. And of course, anywhere in Eretz Yisrael and beyond. So we know that the Daf Yomi finishes Maseches Erevin on Sunday. I think back to my paternal grandfather, Isidore Gibber, a blessed memory, who was known as Grandpa Gibber. My grandpa was an eggman, and he was a farmer. And, you know, together with my grandma, a blessed memory. So they raised the Shomer Shabbos family in Monticello, New York, in the Catskills, in the country, as we like to call the country, upstate New York, in Monticello. Now, at the time that my grandparents raised a family in Monticello, it was a time and a place where such an accomplishment was extremely rare. Like, it wasn't like today. You go to the Catskills, you know, you got Chassidim, you got yeshivas, you have, of course, in the summer, tons and tons and tons of camps. You got multiple pizza shops and kosher restaurants and farm store. I mean, it's not like today. So it was rare to be able to do that, but to be able to raise Shomer Shabbos, Torah abiding families, you know, in the sticks of the mountains was extraordinary. Now, despite my grandpa's unbridled commitment to a Torah way of life, which he was committed to unwaveringly, so he founded, for example, the Sullivan County Hebrew Day School. He's founded the Lansfield Avenue Shul Synagogue in Monticello. See, he himself, though, never had a yeshiva education, or he never had the opportunity to be a serious Torah learner. He just never did. He was committed to raising a family in the Derech HaTorah, but he himself, he never had the merit to study properly in yeshiva, Jewish day school education. Now, it was for that reason, when I think about this every day, and as I'm going to turn the page on Sunday, ending Maseches Erevin and beginning Maseches Pesachim, I think about this every day, and certainly when I go from one Masechta to another Masechta, it's for this reason that when he finished Shas, my grandpa, blessed memory, for the first time at 88 years old, of course you would imagine, it was an enormous celebration for my entire family. Everybody was just beyond excited. And in fact, it was a grand siyum where relatives from our big family were flown from all over the world to share the milestone together with him. They came, and there were, of course, children and grandchildren and Kanai Nahara, many, 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 many great-grandchildren to come celebrate with him the milestone at 88 years old. It's unbelievable to finish Shas every single day. But what was riveting and seared into the memory of every one of his descendants, his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, I, his grandson, that my grandfather of blessed memory has emplaced in all of us this, which is unbelievable. What was riveting and what was seared into the memory of all of his descendants wasn't just the incredible and the awesome feat of finishing Shas as an older man. What was remarkable was his decision to begin learning the Daf Yomi, to begin learning Shas at the ripe old age of 80 years old. And so I, as his grandson, inherited together with my siblings and my cousins and all of our children, this unbelievable, relentless pursuit of being able to believe that there is literally anything possible. It wasn't just remarkable that he finished Shas as an old man. It was remarkable that he made a decision to begin Shas as an old man. He started learning Daf Yomi at 80. Think about how many people you know that are 80. 80 years old, you're going to start learning Shas? You're going to start learning Shas at 80 years old? My grandpa said, yes. Because there is never a time that it's called too late. And when he finished it, which he set out to do, first of all, every single day it gave him a lot of life. It gave him a task of the day. There's no retirement. You know, retirement doesn't exist when you're a Ben Torah and a Bas Yisrael. You can still grow until every day is Daf Yomi. One of my first cousins painted a beautiful picture of my grandpa that was disseminated to all of our cousins that became like the caricature of his life. Here he lived all these years in a certain way. And the caricature of his life was him sitting in his Florida home with his trademark suspenders, with his daf yomi open, studying Torah. And that's a picture that many of us have and many of us remember as the image of my grandpa. Because to him, at the end of his life, it was the daf yomi. Not just finishing the Shas, but beginning the Shas. It's an incredible concept. It's an amazing idea that we can always begin and it's never too late. Esav's disdain is Yaakov Avinu's gain. Let us be embracing the concept and be aware of what it is that we can accomplish, what it is that we can do, and it's never too late. And we'll always remember, as my brother recently shared with me a beautiful quote, Jim England once said, there is great meaning in life for those who are willing to journey. How true it is. Those of us who are willing to journey, those of us who are willing to challenge ourselves, for us to think about who we wish to be and to spend our blessed days accomplishing and trying to achieve that in every way and in any way possible. Anything is possible, and it is never, ever too late. The midah of the Bechora, the lesson of the first, realizing as the heirs and the spiritual heirs of Yaakov Avinu, we take that attribute and we emplace it and embalm it into in a very meaningful way into our hearts. And in so doing, we become the very best of who we are meant and destined to be. Kein yihi ratzon v'nomar amen. I thank you all so much for listening. Thank you again to our sponsors, those of you who have joined us here in the Zoom room and those who are listening via Facebook Live and other portals of social delivery of this class. We thank you so much for being part of it. And we look forward to our next opportunity next week at our learning insights into the weekly Parsha. But for now, I wish everybody a beautiful day, wonderful rest of your day, and a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. Thank you so much for listening. Be happy, be holy, be happy, and be well.